Welcome to Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
And this week, we are discussing the problem of evil and suffering.
Dun, dun, dun.
I know, looking at the show title and the podcast list, it's like, what is this about? Like, this is not fun. And to me, I think this is one of the central questions of not just Christianity, but all faith and non-faith.
Right.
Because suffering does exist and people observe it and experience it. So then the question becomes, why is that? Why is that the case? And then who's doing anything about it? Why is God not doing anything about it? And so forever, all religions, all peoples have asked this question.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so the disclaimer is we're asking, and we're not going to solve it in this episode of Faith Uncut. So that's the spoiler. We don't have the answers for
we
you.
We ain't got them.
But we did want to talk through them because it's important. I don't think there's a lot of attention given to actually answering some of these questions. And then once you start to answer some of the questions or just try to explore them, you'll end up with more questions.
Yeah.
And those questions take you somewhere. And I think that journey is important because it says a lot about the world and how we interact and engage with each other. And also the God that we subscribe to.
Yep.
So
here we go.
One of the mistakes that I don't want to make in the show is we have to set up front that there's different types of suffering. Like, there's suffering in theory, which we talk about, and it's easy to sit behind mics in a cozy studio and say, all right, well, suffering is this or whatever, but actual suffering in real life
looks different for everybody.
And it brings with it a level of urgency that we wouldn't have in a discussion like this.
Right.
So as I'm talking about this and as you're listening, I try to remember that I would prefer to be talking about actual suffering as opposed to theoretical suffering.
Right.
But there'll be some, a little bit of mixing.
There'll be some overlap there.
Okay. So we say suffering exists. Why does suffering exist? We have a world full of people and things, and we can't seem to get rid of this thing.
No, but I think it's a part of, I don't know, human nature. Wherever there's a lot of us operating in a system, somehow we've decided that someone will be in that system at some sort of disadvantage.
Okay. And then are we not exclusive in our suffering, right?
No.
So we got the kingdom, the animal kingdom suffers.
Mm-hmm.
As we're speaking today, there's this bomb cyclone. That's this historic thing, which is a sign that the planet is correcting itself, which means that
whether we like it or not.
Yep. It does not care about us. It will fix itself.
Or our Congress. Exactly.
We didn't fix it, so it will fix us.
Like, fine. Okay.
So there's lots of, those type of things, we can break those up into two categories. So we talk about the cyclone. That's what people typically refer to as like natural evil or natural suffering. So those are things that happen. And there may not be a direct correlation with an action of a person.
Right. Okay.
And then there's moral evil, which is, you know,
subjective to human beings.
That's R. Kelly. That's
Manafort.
Allegedly Felicity Huffman. That is a lot of things. Okay.
Things that people do, but she tried it.
Think about it like that. Things that people do, things that people don't do.
Mm-hmm.
Though I may argue later that there's a lot of bleed in both of those things. Okay.
I mean, so I feel like, yes, we're going to explore these questions and they need to be explored. But like you said, it causes people to maybe ask other questions. Mm-hmm. And if I believe this, then down the line, do I really believe this? I don't know. We can keep going, but even as I'm thinking about it, I'm like, there is suffering that is caused on purpose because someone has decided that it's okay for, you know, this segment of a group, a population to have to deal with this negative thing or this thing that causes negative things to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And someone has decided that it's worth it because more people are going to be happy. More people are going to be healthy. More people are going to be XYZ. So, I mean, the moral part we've talked about previously, where a lot of things boil down to politics. And it's not so much politics in terms of political science, in terms of just government, but just how groups decide who's going to have what resources and how they will be given out and who will have authority over those, you know, that process.
Mm-hmm. I say we'll talk about this later, but just want to ask the question now, does natural evil have a moral dimension? And the reason why I ask that is because if you read a book like or a text like the Bible, mm-hmm. and you see a situation where someone does something and that institutes or causes a famine, or someone does something and that causes some action to happen,
mm-hmm.
We see this perception of correlation between the
action
and the event.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of times those events are explanations for what we would typically say are natural evil, like mm-hmm. acts of God and things like that. Do we think that those are events? And again, a lot of these we're not gonna have answers for.
I know, but like even by what you're saying, of course, the first thing that pops in my mind is, I guess we call it climate change or
correct,
whatever. The Earth is getting hot. That causes natural negative events to happen, but that definitely has a moral side because we're arguing. To what extent are we responsible to avoid doing the things or investing in making it better
mm-hmm.
for everyone? But again, and within this system, we've decided that those people or those countries or those locations that are least able to repel
mm-hmm.
us doing better for ourselves
mm-hmm.
are the ones who are going to have to suffer the most.
Yeah.
So like our storms are getting more powerful.
Mm-hmm. And so the way that shows up, if you make the connection, let's say a typhoon hits Japan
mm-hmm.
and maybe 3 people die, but a typhoon hits Haiti and
300,000
people
die. Mm-hmm.
And the difference there is not the event, but it is, let's say, the climate change or perhaps the policies around infrastructure
right.
or things like that that we know. Like we mentioned in the previous episode, Haiti was intentionally impoverished, and mm-hmm. so they cannot build the infrastructure in a way to prevent or just save lives in an event like that.
Right.
And so there is some bleed in terms of our moral actions versus
right.
the natural events that occur.
Right.
So the theory is that we could prevent a lot of the death and things like that. Like we had that what was that? Polar vortex.
Mm-hmm.
That was about 2 months ago.
Yep.
17 people died.
Mm.
Why did 17 people die? Is that
right.
Is it the weather or is it the fact that we didn't check on our people or we didn't have resources
enough
in place
yeah.
and things like that? So
it could be a mixed bag.
Right. So the inclination is to blame God or ask God,
right.
why didn't God save it? Or God, this is an act of God.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be an act of God working in conjunction with our acts or lack of action.
Right.
So.
More so how I see these things.
Me too.
Yeah.
So, but I don't think a lot of people do. I think the knee-jerk reaction is to say, well, I don't understand why God would do this.
Right.
And I'm thinking, I don't understand why we're still like this. Why didn't we do better
yeah,
to prevent
yeah, yeah,
this?
Yeah. But I think that probably comes back down to is a person willing to confront that. Humans could have done more
mm-hmm.
in a particular situation, leaving God holding the bag. You know, if you run out of people to hold accountable, eventually you'll just be there like, ah, you did it. You know,
mm-hmm.
even, I mean, especially things going down between people, because I know even I have said, why is their heart like that or something, you know, mm-hmm. because this person caused something negative to happen to other people. But did my actions or did anybody else's actions thwart their actions? No.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes those things play out in the long game as far as like it had to go down like that because you didn't know, you know, or maybe it didn't have to, but you realize that, you know, negative action A is actually connected to positive action B. If action A didn't happen, B wouldn't have ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes that gives like a, you know, on the way out, all right, it's all right type of feeling.
So I was thinking about last week's show where we were talking about the Bible and what we do with it. And as I was listening back to it, I'm thinking about how disruptive things like that can be.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what the outline for this show is, so I know how disruptive I'm about to be. And it kind of reminds me of there was a time when the earth was believed to be flat.
Mm-hmm.
Not now by flat earthers, but in actual educated
in real
people believed the earth to be flat.
Right.
And not only that, it was the center of the universe. Mm-hmm. So Copernicus comes along and says, wait a minute, Earth is not the center of the universe. We have a heliocentric universe, and the sun is the center of this, mm-hmm. and we're going around it. And so someone like Galileo comes along and say, hey, you know what? That's absolutely right. I believe you. And so that violates everything that mm-hmm. that everyone believes. And so Galileo was put under house arrest by the Roman Catholic Church because he believed in heliocentricity.
Mm-hmm.
But he was right. And it was the church that was holding him. And now what happens from that is, if we don't make that discovery, or if we don't make that shift, we don't do other things. Like we don't launch satellites because we don't understand the science.
We don't make it to the moon.
We don't make it to the moon, but we don't even have simple things like GPS, or we don't have a lot of things because we would still be thinking the universe revolves around us. And so,
humans.
Yeah. So at some point we do have to ask questions like this and challenge, just because the propensity is for us to believe it's about us.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're talking about evil, it's important to realize that it may be about us. It may be about something else other than what we believe. But let's talk about God.
Let's talk about
what do we believe about God? In a theistic view of God, or a theist, someone who believes in God,
mm-hmm.
typically, and this is not all across the board, because I'm a theist and I have varying beliefs.
Okay.
But typically, God is omnipotent. God is all powerful.
Yep.
Okay. Main reason why that is because the belief that God created this was powerful enough to create this universe,
mm-hmm.
but also that God is worthy of worship and adoration.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, if God is weak in some way, that may not be a God worth worshiping.
Right.
Okay. So what happens is, God has to be that powerful in order to be good. There's something that necessitates God being all powerful mm-hmm. in order to be worthy of human worship. The other side of that view is, God is all knowing. God knows it all. God is omniscient.
Yes.
And that is the God who is powerful enough to do all this should also be knowledgeable enough to know what that God is doing.
Right.
Okay. And then you get varying degrees of that, meaning God knows everything about everything. God knows the number of hairs on your head.
Yes.
God knows so the
that is so comforting, though.
It is. It is to know that God, the same God that orders and structures the universe,
yes.
knows the most minute details about
you.
And I get it. God has to be omniscient, because to have a God with that much power and not know how
that
to wield it.
That doesn't know. Yeah.
Yeah, that's dangerous. All right. And then there's this, we talk about omnipresence, the God being everywhere. But I want to talk about this other element, this omnibenevolence.
Okay.
So there's a tendency to believe that God is good, and all the good is God. Like mm-hmm. everything God does is good.
Right.
And so that's the same thing with the omnipotence. You wouldn't want to worship a God that wasn't good.
Right.
And so
ultimately,
so God's power grows out of our desire to worship a God. That God must be worthy of that worship, and so that God needs to be this powerful.
Right.
Okay.
Powerful, knowing, and ultimately good.
Right. So the problem with the God that powerful is that God has to also be responsible for a lot of the not so great things that happen.
Right.
And so now the theist has a problem with reconciling a God with all of that ability and the evil that persists.
Mm-hmm.
Why doesn't God prevent this? Why didn't God know not to invent this?
Mm-hmm.
Why doesn't God do something to rescue us from this? Okay, so then you have to come up with other answers for that. And so these are things like, God works it out in God's own time, and you know, there's a judgment after this life, and God's justice actually does it kick in at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But those are questions that we have to ask about God. Like, do we really believe that? Oh, why do we believe those things? Do we have to believe those things about God?
Right.
One thing for me as a black person in America, I've been sold on this relational God, this God that, like you said, this is comforting. God,
mm-hmm.
God loves us. And it's so nice to know that the God is wants a personal relationship with me. And so
I'm important.
And so I ask you, you know, do you have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ? And
mm-hmm.
I do all these things. what do I believe about God? Because if I believe God is omnipotent, omniscient, omnibenevolent, mm-hmm. there's no way for me to answer the suffering question. And one of those suffering questions is, if God wanted a relationship with us so much, when is God going to help us?
Mm.
So the reason why is because the analogy is like, if you and I are walking down the street mm-hmm. and I you and I have a relationship and I see you just keep getting beat up, like somebody just come punch you in the face every day. And next day we come down the street, you get punched in the face again. And I'm there and I'm just watching you get punched in the face. I don't do anything. I have the power to do something, but I'm not doing it. I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to interfere. That you get punched in the face, we just keep walking.
Yeah. Okay.
At some point, you're going to interrogate this relationship.
Right.
Like, what is going
on
with you?
Do you even care about?
Right. And that is a fair question to ask of someone who has the ability to intervene on your behalf, but does not.
Right.
So for Black people in America, that is a valid question that theologians have asked mm-hmm. and have not
quite answered.
No, because it's a tough thing to answer.
Yeah.
Because at what point is God just okay perpetually allowing the slavery, the Black codes, the penal system, Jim Crow? Like, at what point is God bad at relationships? That's the question. God wants a relationship with us, mm-hmm. but God seems to be pretty bad at relationships.
But okay, so I guess my perspective on that is just a tad bit different, because I don't know. I'm thinking about everything that you just said, but I feel like the resilience, the resistance, the persistence, these are, and I don't know, maybe it's because I don't want to say like I'm used to the suffering, but I see that we have not succumbed to the suffering and the structures and the barriers. Constantly, we are overcoming it. So using your same analogy, we are walking down the street and every day, you know, somebody's running up to me and sneaking me. Mm-hmm. At some point, I feel like I'm going to start looking around and I'll get better at understanding my surroundings. Mm-hmm. I don't know that. And yes, I will interrogate the relationship. Like, don't you see me over here? But I also think that it's fair for you to say they keep hitting you. Either investigate why that's happening or learn how to fight.
So
is that crazy?
Okay. But how's your relationship with me gonna go when I
mean,
keep
I'm
seeing
not gonna
you get
trust
hit?
You.
And I'm like, well, they ain't gonna stop hitting you. You better do something. You better get a strong
I
face.
I might not
you
understand that, but if you're not gonna be, see, and that's human. I might not understand why it appears to be that way. But that's what I'm saying. If that's how I process people coming on an attack toward me, then I'm saying, okay, in real life, everybody can't come to your rescue regardless of what type of relationship they have with mm-hmm. you. So at some point you have to be involved in your own rescue, defense, whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if God is constantly doing everything for you, how's that any different from a helicopter parent? You don't learn how to do anything for yourself.
Okay. So I think you mentioned it because you said you may develop the ability to find out why you're being hit in the face. You may develop the fortitude to withstand being hit in the face. But what you said was you're not going to trust me.
Yeah, I did say that.
Because you can't get there. It's not that I'm not saving you from that one thing. I'm not doing anything. I'm just walking with you.
Right.
I'm not helping you in at all.
Right.
So how can you trust me?
I don't know. See, and that's what I'm saying. I don't want to police my own words that way, but I'm telling you, even as I work through the analogy, I'm saying I will get better at understanding my environment or understanding what's coming against me. Who's to say that because of your presence walking with me, this energy does not kill me?
Mm-hmm.
They're only throwing punches. Nobody has tried to shoot me. Nobody has tried to stab me in my life. Maybe, just maybe, because they see your presence there and they've decided I'm only going to get away with this little hit.
So they believe that I'm not powerful enough to do anything to them.
I don't think so.
So again,
I don't know.
We
it's
can't
just
answer.
So many,
this is one of those things where I'm bringing up the fact that you have to interrogate these things. And for Black people in this country, that interrogation sometimes looks different.
Yeah.
To be sold an idea of a relational God, you have to be asking, when is that God going to actually get in and act like it's in relationship with us,
right,
with all this suffering going on. The other thing that is done a lot, and not just in Christianity, we'll talk about this in a minute, but justice is placed on the other side of death. So whether that's through a judgment or through karma or reincarnation or whatever the system is, when justice is not meted out in this life, the only life that we can be assured of, unless we're in the matrix or something like that, but in this life, the life that we know, if justice doesn't occur now, then what we've done is say God may not be powerful enough to render justice now. If God can only render justice on the other side of death, what are we saying about God's omnipotence? Because why would God only choose to do it then,
right,
when God has the power to do it now? Either God...
Because we believe that he's powerful enough to do it now.
Right. If God is omnipotent, God should be powerful enough to do it now. If God is omniscient and knows of this suffering, then God should want to do it now.
Mm.
If God is omnibenevolent, God would love us enough to do it now. So if that God cannot do it now...
Just feels like, okay, go ahead.
It feels like I'm making an atheist argument. I'm not.
No.
I'm making actual fair assessments of what it is I believe about God.
Right.
And so I'm trying to challenge people to think through these things, because we do stop short so much. We do stop and say,
right,
God works in mysterious ways, or God's ways are not our ways, and God's that's not sufficient for a lot of people, because it's lazy.
Yeah, it is. But okay, so because I'm not arguing, but I'm just trying to, I'm searching out those examples or those times where I've had these varying perspectives of these ideas. How powerful, how present, how loving, how kind is this entity that I say I'm in relationship with?
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like time is the factor, right, where certain things didn't, and certain events definitely might have, and again, I'm looking at a personal, you know, the individual experiencing a suffering process, a suffering phase. But there are times where that, in that moment, it doesn't make sense. And, you know, it could be a prolonged situation. It could be a situation. Let's say it's a lack of financial resources is causing a lack in your household, and people do not have what they need to function for X amount of time. That can be very hard to go through. It could be of not of any of your actions. You might not have done it to yourself or caused that financial lack to happen. But on day one of it happening versus day seven of it happening versus day 100 of it happening, I just feel like you are also undergoing a process. I don't know if everybody emerges from their suffering periods with their belief intact that God is what they thought he was.
Mm-hmm.
When they go into it. But I feel like time gives you that hindsight to look back and say, did I properly assess what was actually doing or happening or happening on my behalf during that time? You might not be able to see it when you're in the midst of it.
Yeah. So when we think of suffering as something localized to this life, I can see where there's some value in letting time develop other characteristics, other things that allow you to work through it.
Right.
But when you're talking about protracted suffering, i.e. the Native American population in this country, how much time is required?
Right.
How much time is...
But that, I don't know that... Okay, go ahead.
So,
because I'm looking at certain things as just straight up politics.
Yes, but while people are debating and arguing and what to do...
Right, why doesn't God just come
still
in
suffering
and bring justice?
Right, and it's actual suffering for them, and it's not just anything that they can learn their way around or develop the muscles for in this life, because their children are going to experience
right.
it, and their grandchildren,
and
just
are,
like their grandparents experience it.
I was about to
the
say,
same for black
same.
People. Like how, if it's about developing you, then it realistically, it should stop at some point.
That's true.
But when you're talking about hundreds of years of suffering, what is God doing or what is God not doing? So these are real things that occur. I'm telling you, it's really hard to sell black people in a relational God at this point. To me, like I get why it sounds good, but if I stop to think about it, that God sucks at relationships.
Mm.
So, like, these are the,
I have a lot of questions.
But okay. Well, no, that's what we do. This question of evil and suffering matters, because it does say something about the God that we understand. Okay, so let's look at how some other religions actually deal with this problem, because Christianity doesn't have the answer for this as much as we try.
No, we don't.
But in fairness, Islam doesn't have the answer either. They do something similar. Most of the
Abraham.
Yeah. So they have paradise. They have this idea that justice does come.
Mm-hmm.
That justice is pretty much exclusively placed on the other side of this. So things happen in this life that make things better. But just like Christianity, Islam places it on the other side of death, in which case we still have the same question about God's omnipotence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hinduism. Hinduism has this dharma, which is their moral code, and they believe that you should act according to this dharma to build up karma.
Okay.
So that
doing right by people.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that basically in the Christianese, you reap what you sow, or agriculture, whatever. but they also have this idea of reincarnation, which in a way puts your justice on the other side of death. So after this life, you will live another life according to the
what
karma
you
that you built
in
up
this life,
based on the dharma that you followed or not, did not follow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an infinite loop. So there's no beginning to, like, there's no first round for a mirror. You didn't start this. You've always been in this loop where you end one life and begin another.
Mm.
And so you're constantly going up and down this karma scale depending on how you've behaved.
Okay.
And even if you, let's say you're on a crazy winning streak where you've had 18 lives in a row where you just banked all this karma, you're still going to be in this loop. And the incentive is you want to do as much good as possible in the life that you're living.
Right.
To build up this karma, which I think is a great incentive.
Mm-hmm.
You do lose things, though. And what this does to God's omnipotence is, it actually takes it away. They don't call it God like we call it. It's more like a universal divine or supreme being.
Mm-hmm.
But if the laws of karma are always at work, God doesn't have the ability to intervene. So there's no grace in that system, meaning, you know, you deserve this thing, but you got this thing. Or, you know, it's been a bad run
and
for
that's
you.
That's how it's been.
Right. And so that means there's a law at work that even God is subject to.
Right.
And so
it's not
all powerful.
Yep.
Doesn't mean that it's no God
or
supreme being. It just means that even God is subject to the laws of karma.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, you lose your omnipotence. But it's a system that works fine for a lot of people. And I bring that up because I wanted to show one way where the system does work, even if God is not omnipotent in the system.
Okay.
Buddhism is different. It's a reformed Hindu tradition.
Okay.
They focus a lot on the suffering. So the Buddha was young and had the opportunity to be a king or to be this religious leader, and chose to be a king and living life and everything is great, until the Buddha went outside of the palace and Buddha saw four different types of suffering. And so the conclusion was, life is all about suffering.
Mm.
And so what you want to do is reduce the suffering, and the way to do that is to remove attachments. The idea is that your attachments to things causes suffering. So your attachment, it's not just like your attachment to your house or your car, even though those do count, but it's your attachment to this idea that you should be well off, or you should be living a good life. And because you expect to do that, when you're not doing that,
you are
suffering.
Yeah.
And so the idea is to let go of the suffering so that you take whatever comes, which is a way to try to get to this nirvana or this peacefulness that says, hey, yeah, it was good today and it's bad today, but guess what? I'm here and,
I'm good.
We'll see what happens tomorrow. The problem with that is if you're suffering, let's say, for instance, you are a black slave in this country in 1800.
Yes.
There's no incentive. There's no incentive for you to do anything, because you're going to accept what comes. You're going to say, this is life. You know, this is, and I'm not, I don't mean to say that in a soft voice because I'm, it, that's not trying to mock anything, but it's just like you're accepting what comes.
Of what is happening.
And so you don't do the work to actually, one, liberate yourself, which could potentially liberate others, at bare minimum, your children. But, you know, that God in that situation is pretty, pretty passive. God is just watching everything. God is a spectator.
It's my favorite TV show.
Okay.
I used to say that about my life. But go ahead.
All right. So what am I missing? Am I missing anything so far? Like, what's, do you want to jump in and shoot holes in any of them?
No.
Okay. I don't. All right. So we black. So let's talk about our African Yoruba tradition, which are fascinating. Okay.
Which are but a set of various traditions.
Right. So I'm going to group them all under Yoruba spirituality. Right.
Okay.
Now. Okay. There's lots of differences within this, but generally, Oludumare is the creator of everything to include evil. So it's not just like in the Christian idea that God made everything and called it good. Mm-hmm. Yoruba, Oludumare creates it all. And this God is powerful enough to create everything. But this God is not omniscient.
Okay. And
now, the interesting way that they do this, they say that God knows the most of anyone.
Right.
So God is the most knowledgeable, but not all knowledgeable.
No way.
Yeah, right. Okay. So that's how they kind of take care of that. That God is also not omnibenevolent, like this all good. This God is the good judge. The mm-hmm. God. Oludumare judges between good and evil and always judges rightly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The major thing about this is that justice occurs on this earth. So this is the tradition that doesn't put it on the other side of life. This tradition expects Oludumare to judge in this life, and those things happen or not happen, but whatever happens, it's chalked up to Oludumare being making the right decision.
Right.
So you have to trust this God, this omnipotent God, that the decision is the right decision. And it may not be the right decision, but no one knows of a righter decision
than him.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Or her. Because it could go either way here. So we've talked about theist position so far.
Right.
The atheist position or the non-theist position. I want to be fair. The atheist doesn't put anything on the other side of death.
Right.
So whatever incentive there is to do good, to build up the karma, whatever the equivalent is done in this life. And whatever you do or don't do, once this life is over, it is over.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only meaning they derive is what we do while we're alive. So I don't want to paint atheists as these amoral people. They're not.
No.
They are people who just don't subscribe to theistic beliefs, and that they don't say, okay, God is going to take care of this or whatever. Like, we're responsible for doing a lot of this stuff, even if it's just bad.
Mm-hmm.
This is all on us. Okay. So mm-hmm. I think that's, so none of them really, of those five belief systems, and I did a really broad brushstroke.
Yes, you did. But we appreciate your scholarship.
I don't know. I think I prefer the Yoruba. Like I align more with the Yoruba.
That might make more sense to us.
Yeah.
On a really base level.
Yeah, I just feel like
I don't want to hurl like a bunch of mess onto this recording, mm-hmm. but these questions are usually what contribute to someone's coming closer to the church or getting further away from it, because these answers become elusive. And it's not just about their personal experiences. It is about their observations. It is about their expectations. You know, relationship denotes expectation, mm-hmm. that, you know, if I do X, you will do Y. And I think that's where my comment earlier about, you know, well, I wouldn't trust you, mm-hmm. comes from, because I would be saying I expect X and, you know, or I'm doing X and therefore I should be able to expect Y from you. But I can remember when these questions or questions like this disrupted my entire understanding of what it meant for me to be, you know, going to church And I would say that was, you know, young, young. These questions came up again when I went through a period of change that it just disrupted my understanding of what I thought my adult life was going to be. So it's like, but after each cycle, I don't know. And I don't know if that's about forgiveness or some, you know, some sort of concept of forgiveness or of finding some sort of resolution where it's like, oh, you weren't being a complete jerk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these were the real circumstances. And that's why I said maybe time does that. But the gift of time is thinking that you have enough to come to some sort of resolution about your observations or your experiences. Look at what you've done.
I think it's interesting, though, that these end up being the litmus test for, or a litmus test for whether people can stick with church or not. Because I agree with you that it does look that way. Because if you're telling me I got to come and worship this God and give money to support this God and not not those these words church. Or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
These churches that...
These organizations.
Right, serves God. So if I have to do all this stuff and devote all of this time and attention and resources to God, that God better be doing something.
For me.
Or it better be doing something that I can agree with or align with, whatever. What gets lost in this is our part in it. Because the reality is, human beings are not good creatures. Like, we are not.
Trap.
Things started to go horribly wrong once we arrived on the scene.
Yep.
Whether you believe the Christian story of the Garden of Eden, things were fine until humans showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you believe in evolution, the universe got on fine until we showed up.
Right.
And you can be Christian and believe in evolution. But, like,
dun.
Humans seem to be the issue, but the question always seems to be posed about God, because we believe God is even more powerful than us. So what needs to be asked and answered is, because we're not good, if we want God to remove the evil, are we okay with God removing the thing that causes the most evil? So you gotta say, all right, God, I really want us to stop suffering. I'm okay with getting rid of humanity. Yeah, that's a real question for us. Like, turn the focus off of what God is not doing and what we are doing. Do we really want this?
But I feel like that's God as the scapegoat. Like, people who say God will fix it, but then continuously contribute to whatever might be going wrong, are scapegoating God because they're obscuring their hand in what they can humanly, you know, use their energy to change. I feel this way about not so many individual people as much as it is about certain institutions, right? So, like, oh my goodness, like, the example that comes to mind is how they had those hearings to decide if they should change sentencing disparities for drugs, right? And it's like, everybody in that room knows that it is wrong. It is effed up. It is, there is no moral standing for treating black and brown people who are dealing with drugs any different from treating white people who are dealing with drugs, right? And yet some of our best and brightest legal minds were making arguments for and against, you know, this issue. But you would think that something like that, that, you know, has caused huge suffering across wide, you know, swaths of the community, that people would be chomping at the bit to do what is right. It's the same thing that I think about when you see somebody's been wrongfully incarcerated, and it was of no, it wasn't because they were helpless or hapless. It was so intentional to, you know, get that person railroaded and incarcerated and forgotten about, you know, and then when they get out, you know, people don't take responsibility and accountability for their actions. I just feel that, you know, nobody's going to say take the humans off the table.
Because they don't want to, but what if that's the only solution?
No, but I feel like that's where, I don't know how you rectify knowing that people go out of their way to hurt you and then tell the person who's being hurt, no vengeance, you know, or vengeance is mine, says the Lord, you know, I will repay. Now, people who have lived long enough, and I keep going back to time, people have seen that example. I will repay. Sometimes it's not even the action that the person put into the mix that like you said, because I don't want to think about it that way, but it's like people cause foolishness in other people's lives, other people's communities, and all of a sudden their house burns down.
Yeah.
Nobody did it. Mm-hmm. But now they finally understand, you know, what it's like to just be.
Just be out.
Yeah, to just be out. So it's just like, eh.
So the reason why I asked that question is because that is probably the one thing that could resolve the relational God issue for me. Mm-hmm. Because if removing evil meant removing humans, but God did not do that, that would mean that perhaps that God loves us so much that even though that's the thing that would reduce or remove the harm to the creation, mm-hmm. God won't do that because of that relationship. Now, if that is the case, then that God does have a weakness, in which case you can't have an omnipotent God. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. this is how the question goes. And this is what we've been discussing. This is questioning God's justice. The theological term is theodicy. So we've talked for 45 minutes about theodicy.
Theodicy.
But these are real questions that must be asked and answered. Not just because you want to witness to people and get them in your church, but because it means something about God. It means something about what we believe in. And so I think that's it.
I mean, we've done a lot here. Now we have to have follow-ups because now my mind is racing. Shoot.
All right. For Faith Uncut, I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.